Hi, this is Cynthia Davis. On our show today, we talk about the story of the bread and fish for 5,000. So I'm going to share the story with you so you'll get what's coming. As the day declined, the 12 said, "Dismiss the crowd so they can go to the farms and villages around here and get a room for the night and a bite to eat. We're out here in the middle of nowhere." "You feed them," Jesus said. They said, "We couldn't even scrape up more than 5 loaves of bread and a couple of fish, unless, of course, you want us to go into town ourselves and buy food for everybody." There were more than 5,000 people in the crowd. But Jesus went ahead and directed his disciples, "Sit them down in groups of 50. They did what he said, and soon everyone was seated. Then Jesus took the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, lifted his face to heaven in prayer, blessed, broke, and gave the bread and fish to the disciples to hand out to the crowd. After the people had eaten their fill, 12 baskets of leftovers were gathered up.
I'm an American!
Welcome to Homefront. I'm Cynthia Davis, your host, and I'm here to help. From parenting to public policies to political advice, join me in taking America back one family at a time. As a speaker, writer, former legislator, mother of 7, and wife of 1 for over 30 years, I bring you my experience.
Don't lose your freedom.
And now it's time for Homefront.
Don't lose your freedom. Let's talk about it.
Welcome to Homefront. Today we have Troy Schmidt. Troy is an accomplished writer for television and film, including the Mickey Mouse Club. He was the writer for Hermie and Friends, the children's video series, and he comes to us today to talk about his newest book called Fish Sandwiches. So welcome, Troy.
Yeah, thank you for having me on today. I appreciate it.
Well, when I read your biography, I was especially excited about Mickey Mouse Club.
Oh, yeah? Why's that?
You look way too young to have contributed as a writer to the Mickey Mouse Club, but I was born in 1959, so that was really cool. Like, we all grew up on the Mickey Mouse Club.
Okay, so you're thinking of Annette Funicello, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay, that wasn't me. I was the 90s show.
Okay.
That had Justin Timberlake and Christina Aguilera and Britney Spears and Ryan Gosling on it. So we had those stars during my time. So thank you for not confusing me with someone in their 70s.
That's funny. I loved it. Anyway, let's talk about the idea of fish sandwiches. I'm not sure how popular they are in our culture. I do like the fish sandwiches from Culver's. I will say that. Those are...
Have you tried the McDonald's Filet-O-Fish in a while?
No, not in a long time.
I got to tell you, because I wrote this book, I went in and I just shot a little video while I was there. And I ate one of them and I went, wow, these are still good. So give it a shot, you know.
Well, what I'm trying to imagine is in a culture where they have no refrigeration, how appetizing would it be to eat a fish sandwich? I mean, the smell would be pretty fishy, and the pictures all show them still with their scales on, unless it's smoked salmon. So give us more thoughts about your fish sandwich idea and where that came from.
Yeah, absolutely. So the whole idea of the book came from the fact that I was looking at all of the miracles that Jesus performed, and I was looking at the consistency of them in each of the Gospels. And I realized there were only two miracles that were mentioned in all four Gospels. One of them, obviously, the resurrection, which is so important, 1 Corinthians 15. It's all about the resurrection, right? But the second one, and the only other one, was the feeding of the 5,000. And then added in addition to that, that there was a sequel to it, and there's feeding of the 4,000. So this miracle is not only mentioned in all four, but it also was performed again for a different crowd of people. So that's what got me looking at it. And of course, the main ingredients that Jesus multiplied over and over again were bread and fish. And I don't know why, but when I just saw bread and fish together, I put it together and I made a fish sandwich out of it.
Nice. So your first chapter starts with one of those horrid nursery rhymes. As a child of the 50s, we not only got to grow up with the original Mickey Mouse Club, but we had to memorize all these nonsensical nursery rhymes, one of them being Little Miss Hubbard Sat in Her Cupboard.
Right.
Yeah. And the other crazy one was, there once was a woman who lived in a shoe. She had so many children, she didn't know what to do. She gave them broth without any bread. She whipped them soundly and sent them to bed. And I don't know why.
So brutal.
Yeah. You know, today she'd be in trouble for child abuse.
Absolutely. The DCF would be called.
Exactly. But yet, tell us what we're supposed to learn from old Mother Hubbard.
Well, you know, it was that whole idea of the fact that her cupboard was bare. And it was so bad that she really didn't have anything for the dog to eat. And it was that whole idea of need and desiring something and being hungry. And so the premise of the book is that we are all hungry, that we're all starving for something, and that God can fulfill the needs that we have. And so that's what began the process of unveiling the 9 different promises that I believe that come from the miracle, that those feed areas of our life that we're starving. And maybe some of us are just suffering from malnutrition because of it.
Malnutrition, I would agree. In fact, the studies show that church attendance is declining, and I don't know if you have an opinion of that, but you do have a discussion about third spaces. Give us your thoughts. First of all, do you think people are leaving the formal church because they're leaving hungry, or why do we need third spaces?
So in addition to being an author, I'm also part-time as a pastor at the First Baptist Church of Windermere. I'm a campus pastor at one of the locations. Been there coming up 22 years. So I'm very involved in church work. So yes, I see the hungry that are coming in. I go over their prayer requests every week and pray for them. There are a lot of people out there that are starving that are in the church right now. Now, why are they leaving? I think one of the reasons is the fact that there are so many other options out there to what people think they could be fed. If you drive down any street right now, look at all the food choices you have and think about how many you had, say, I don't know, 10 years ago or 15 years ago. There's so many franchises. There's so many options and so many possibilities. And right now we're seeing a lot of the world is encroaching on what used to be holy time. I'll take, for example, Sundays. There used to be nothing scheduled on Sundays for people, but right now we're up against Little League. We're up against baseball. We're up against sports. And their practices are now on Sundays. We used to have a thriving Wednesday night program. Well, guess what? People weren't showing up anymore. It wasn't the church night any longer for people. And so other options kept creeping in. And so the world has sort of pushed its way into our schedules, and people are finding that they're just getting hungry and they're looking for a place to go. That's why the church, and especially us, we push small groups so that people can have relationships, real relationships with people, not a relationship with the church sitting in a pew and looking up at a pastor and think they have a relationship with them, but someone they can talk to, identify with, and share their deepest needs.
So tell us the 9 things we're supposed to learn from the fish and the bread miracle.
Yeah, so the nine promises, I believe, that came out of that are, first of all, that God pays attention to our needs. The second one is he has compassion. And as you read the miracle, you see that he noticed that everyone was hungry. And how did he notice that? I mean, he was, you know, sitting there, there's a giant crowd of people. And the first thing he says, these people are probably all very hungry. So he's paying attention to needs. That's the first thing. He has compassion then when he notices that need. And he says, I want to do something about it. The next thing is that there is provision. And so he provided then for the need through the bread, the fish, which all came from a boy, which the book of John talks about. So when we have that need and he sees that need, he says, I'm going to provide for it also. The other is spiritual health. That I believe that when he provides that need, he doesn't just want to meet the need so that the need is met on a physical level or maybe a relationship level, but at a deeper level, that being spiritual. Then there is the promise of God's power. Well, that's just done through the miracle itself, that he has the ability to bring fish and bread out of nowhere. And get this, it's already baked bread. It's already cooked fish. And thousands of them are coming out for all the people. So that's a powerful thing. And so I acknowledge the fact that God still can do miracles, and we just need to pay attention to where he is working. And then also, this was interesting. He says to them, I want you to sit in groups of 50. And he's talking about community there. And again, when I addressed about the church and small groups, I think he's saying that you're going to find something you need if you get into those groups. And then there's fulfillment. Every one of the miracles, it says, everyone ate and was satisfied. And then there is the blessing, the entire blessing of being in the presence of God and seeing him work and seeing all that he can do in your life. They were all left blessed because of what happened there. And then finally, it's the promise of eternity. And in John chapter 6, he is addressing some of the spiritual religious leaders at the time. And he goes on to talk about how he is the bread of life and goes on to say that if we consume this bread, we will live forever with him.
Yeah, well, one of the points you mentioned was God pays attention to our hurts and our needs. The point is that we seem to get confused over when is asking God too much. Would somebody there have even thought of maybe Jesus should perform a miracle and feed everybody?
You know, that wasn't on the minds of the apostles. They were the whole time they were confused. Now, how are we going to feed all of these people? So they did not acknowledge the power of Jesus. They basically just gave up and just said, I obviously can't do anything here. And we don't have enough money. They were thinking about very practical needs to meet the need. So when I talked about the whole idea of God's power and miracles, we have to acknowledge that it is possible that we know a God where the power of a miracle is possible. But I also make very clear in it that we cannot demand from God what exactly it is that he needs to do, that he has his will. And so it was, of course, of Jesus' will to decide to feed all these people. He didn't have to. He could have said, all right, guys, let's break it up. And you guys get something to eat and we'll reconvene back here in a couple hours, right? But he wanted to find a way directly to say something to these people right now that I am the one who the Old Testament has been talking about, and I'm here to fulfill everything that God has intended me to fulfill. So that miracle really showed his identification, who he was. And the other thing I talk about in the book is that does God have to keep proving himself to us? I mean, if you're a believer, does he have to do a miracle to prove that he's God? No, he's proven he's God through Jesus Christ and through his death and through his resurrection. He's done plenty. He's revealed himself in my life here and there and spoken to me in powerful, you know, ways. He has done enough. He doesn't have to prove himself through a miracle. So it's a dangerous slope. It's slippery. But we should know who we're addressing and pray with respect to his will that he could do the miracle if he wanted to. And I think it gives us some hope also knowing that.
So if that did enough good, feeding the 5,000, why did he repeat it again, feeding the 4,000? What was up with that one?
So the four passages that talk about the feeding of the 5,000 make it clear that he was addressing the Jews. It talks about the fact that Passover was near, and also that he was in the area of Bethsaida. And have you ever been to Israel?
No, I haven't.
Oh, you need to go. But you start to see the way some of these things were laid out. And I've had a chance a few times to go there. And it's a remote area. It's right on the Sea of Galilee, where that miracle could have happened, would have been, say, removed from the closest town. But it was primarily a Jewish. I mean, it would have been a Jewish audience there for the 5,000. When the 4,000 occurred, it seems that it occurs in a different place. And when you go to Israel, they talk about the area called Kursi, K-U-R-S-I. And there are actually some tiles, and there's some inscriptions in some of the ancient churches that they have found there that have bread and fish. And this was on the other side, I call it the other side of the tracks for a Jewish person, the other side of the Sea of Galilee. And that's where the pagans or the Gentiles would have lived. And so the feeding of the 4,000 seems to have occurred in that area where possibly the demoniac was healed, about in that area. And so I think what Jesus was saying here is, hey, Jews, my people, I've come to you to feed you. But then he took his apostles over to the other side. And he said, I'm going to feed them too. I'm here for the Jews and the non-Jews. And so that was a very powerful statement for those apostles that showed the real heart of God, that he's just not here for sort of the elite and the elect, but he's here for everyone, no matter what their need is.
Yeah, if I were there, I would have probably asked him if we couldn't have ice cream cones for dessert.
You know, and we do get a little demanding. I did want to talk about this in the book. I was bringing it up now and then. But, our prayer requests sometimes, there wasn't anybody at that feeding of the 5,000 that put in a special request. They said, can the bread be gluten-free? I don't like fish so much. Can we have a nice steak? That just seems sort of inappropriate. I mean, God provides real practical needs of what you need at that moment. And hunger for those people was the real need right then. So we need to kind of check our attitude when we're talking to God and praying to him.
Tell us about the leftovers. I'm curious myself, and I didn't ponder this until I saw your book, but you would imagine that God would make sure there was enough food for everybody. And wouldn't that be, it would have been just as miraculous if everybody had had one sandwich. If 10,000 people all of a sudden got one sandwich, that would have been great. But no, what was the point of having all that food left over more than what they could eat?
That's a great point. I never thought of that. If there had been an exact number and there wasn't one bite left over, you would have said, wow, God, you are amazing that you somehow knew exactly how many fish and how many loaves of bread, and you hit the number exactly. I mean, it's the kind of guy you would want to be your wedding planner, right? Or the guy that sets up your banquets. He gets exactly right, and there's no overage you have to pay for. But every one of the accounts talks about the baskets. It talks about what was left over. The numbers themselves are significant too, but that's the idea of that chapter about blessing, is that God not only meets our need, but he's a God that wants to bless us above and beyond our need. And so, I think when a lot of times when we think, God bless us, we don't think of ourselves as having an overflow and going, maybe I should take what he's blessed me with and go and serve other people and go help others and go feed others. And so I tried to imagine, there's nothing in the Bible about it, is what did they do with the leftovers? Did they use it on their trips to feed some of the homeless along the way? Did the birds of the air, which are talked about in Matthew, that God takes care of, did they enjoy the crumbs and the pieces that were sitting over? Was this God's way of taking care of them? And so there's a lot of places we can sort of imagine, but I think what God wanted to say is, I'm a God who sees your need, I'm going to meet your need, but I'm also going to give you a little extra. And I think he's hoping that we would take that little extra and go and bless other people.
Is there any part of this miracle that surprised you when you started studying it and you said, well, that doesn't sound like the God I thought I had? Was there one moment when you were writing this book and you sat up in your chair and put your pen down and said, well, I never saw that side of God?
Well, I think when I was approaching this, and I worked on this book a long time, I've always had it sort of in my pocket, so to speak, and worked on it now and then. And so the process was just a slow revelation for me. But I think a couple of the areas, one of them was the one that I just talked about, and that being the baskets, the overflow. That I was the kind of God that was, I was thinking about the kind of God that always just sort of gave me enough. I think I was also the sort of person that always said, you know, I think God wants to always teach me a lesson, but I don't think he really wants to bless me. And so for me, as I was going through this, I was realizing a God of blessing. And it's not a blessing that I would say was to prosperity. Right. I'm not saying that I'm expecting him to make me rich or anything, but I'm just saying that he's a God that wants to throw in a little extra now and then because he loves me. And he's no different than what I do as a father with my boys. There's one section I talk about about Santa Claus and Christmas. And we always look at our children's lists. And I remember seeing them and thinking, wow, that's a lot of stuff. Is that good for them? And then going through and sort of editing it and making some modifications and putting in things that I think they could use, but actually blessing them with the things they asked for because I knew them. And I knew how they played with toys and I knew their attention span. And so I gave them what I felt was the best thing. And so they always had a great Christmas, but I always look at God that way, that he wants to meet my needs. He wants to know my dreams. He wants to fulfill those things, but he has a better idea also than I could ever imagine. That was something that I really worked on and pulled out of this.
Is there something you can say to encourage people who are discouraged today? There are some people who are looking at their lives and they're not seeing the miracles. And especially when you look at the country, it seems like there are a lot of bad things happening. Places that we once used to enjoy are getting burned down and people are having to move. Loved ones are dying. But in a bigger sense, the country seems more divided than ever. And people need peace in their lives. What gives you peace and what gives you hope?
Well, you know, the whole idea that what came out of this book is something I apply on a regular basis. The whole idea that God sees my need, which starts this book off, isn't that enough for us? Just to know that God is aware. And I think that we think God is so busy with all those other things that are going on in the world. You know, he's busy helping with the reconstruction of Notre Dame. You know, he's busy helping out with that the war that's going on in Afghanistan and the Ebola crisis in Africa. That he's got his hands full. And here I am. I just need a simple meal right now. I just have this very simple need right now. I don't really think God's paying attention or he cares. And he absolutely does. And so the whole idea that he would feed people just a sandwich, I mean, that was it. It was just a sandwich. It didn't keep them full and satisfied for the rest of their lives. They ate another meal later on. Maybe that was the only meal they had that day. But he just saw that need, met it, and then continued to meet needs left and right. And so when I see that, I want to say to people, he knows, and he's working, and there are things going on. And things have to be arranged in order to come into your life at the right time. Just be patient. Just be aware. And just keep looking up to God. And he will find a way to serve your need because he loves you. You know, I just hope that that's enough for people. I mean, people say, yeah, that's nice. But where is what a thing I need? But it's like, well, you wouldn't do that with your kids, right? You shouldn't be meeting their needs every moment they have something. You have to put things together and get them ready. You have to teach them patience in the meantime. And I think God is teaching us some things right now with all of this that's going on right now in the world. He's teaching us something to remain steadfast, keep our eyes focused, and continue going deeper with our relationship with him. Let all these other things just sort of be on the peripheral. We don't have to pay attention to them. Just pay attention to him. And I think that's where you find hope. That's where I find hope. And I think others do, too.
It sounds like a great message. Do you have one story for us of how the book's making a difference? Has anybody read? I know it's just come out, so it's kind of new. But have you gotten any feedback yet from people?
It is new. It's been 2 weeks. I've noticed the difference between people that just come up to me and say, hey, I got your book. And then they don't say anything after that. But there are others that have said, man, I read your book and I never saw the miracle that way. There was just, you went so deep into it. And just now I see that miracle in a whole different perspective. And that's exactly what I wanted to happen. I sat on this book a real long time because I kept thinking somebody is going to come out with the book about the miracle of the feeding of the 5,000. And I'm going to do all this work and someone else is going to release it. Well, I never saw it. I never saw the book come out. I saw chapters where someone would address the miracle, but never sort of blow it out into an entire book. I talked to Max Licato one time, I said, you know, I got this idea for a book, and I figured I could trust him, you know. And I said, it's about the feeding of the 5,000. And I remember the look on his face. He was like, oh. And I went, oh, no, he's going to steal it. But that's, Max isn't going to do that. But nobody had done it that I could find. I kept searching on ChristianBook.com and Amazon, feeding the 5,000, where's the book? Never showed it. And I feel like, you know what? I'm going to need to be the one that puts it out there. So slowly, there is a discovery process that people are getting the book, are reading it. Many of my friends who just got the book are halfway through. So I am eagerly awaiting more stories like that as people get all the way through and say, wow, thank you. And thank you for helping us see this miracle in a whole new light.
Well, I liked it. It's simple enough for everybody to understand. And it's in small enough chapters that people can grasp it and say, oh, yeah, I get it. It's not like so theologically complex. I think the whole thing was designed to be relatable to every single person.
Well, with any author, it's going to be an extension of themselves. Nav Press said to me that this is probably the first book they put out that actually quoted two Rolling Stones songs. And so, I mean, that's just kind of who I am. And I hope it's a great experience for those who read it.
It is. But I can't let you get away without telling us your two Rolling Stone quotes.
Well, I'm talking about in the section about satisfaction and fulfillment. So obviously, if I'm talking about satisfaction, I have to talk about the song Satisfaction. You can't get no satisfaction. When you look at those two songs that Keith and Mick wrote about, it's almost like, wow, they almost sound like there was Solomon in Ecclesiastes. It's like they're saying it's meaningless and it's meaningless and I can't get no meaning in anything I do. And so there's that song. And then the other song was You Can't Always Get What You Want. And I was like, Are you kidding me? There's like two songs from the Rolling Stones. These are a group of guys who have gotten everything they've ever needed in life. They're successful. You know, people bring them everything, the food, everything they need. And they're saying, they're writing songs like this? Are you kidding me? What's exactly where Solomon was at, wasn't he? He had everything, but he couldn't find any satisfaction. So I related that to the Rolling Stones, who are kind of like King Solomon's, right, of the modern day, and sort of saying, where are we going to find true satisfaction?
Well, that sounds like a great idea. And there are a lot of people who now they're going to end up singing that song in their head the rest of the day. I can't get no satisfaction.
I know. Yep.
Oh, makes sense. Well, thank you for being with us today. I want you to give us one last piece of advice. If you could speak to everybody in America, tell us what we need to know.
There really isn't any other message right now that's on my heart than the opportunity we have at our church. Probably about 4,000 people are going to hear the gospel, the truth. And so as you look at this world right now that you addressed earlier, and just how lost everyone seems, how needy, how hungry, that one simple truth and fact, which Jesus talked about with the bread, him being the bread of life, is that he wants to have a relationship with you now and forever, for eternity. And I can't figure that out. I can't figure out why he would want to do that with me. You, no problem. You're a nice, sweet person. I can see why God would want to hang out with you forever. But me? But I understand that if Jesus would came to this earth to die for me, and to extend that offer of grace to me, he must love me. And then continue to use me and to bless my life. He continues to show his love to me. So my message would be just with the focus of what Easter is all about. That is the only hope. We are not going to find hope in our government. We are not going to find hope in exercise and nutrition and all those sort of things. We're not going to find hope in anything that's presented in the mass media. We're only going to find hope in Jesus Christ. And so that's just the message on my heart right now. I think it's timeless, and I hope your readers are encouraged by that.
It is a good one, and we are encouraged by it. And I thank you so much, Troy, for giving us a few minutes out of your happy birthday day.
Oh, thank you.
This has been great. You seem like a prolific author, so I hope we get to talk to you again when you get another book coming out.
Yes. You know, I'm curious about you. As I was reading about you, I said, I'm not really the kind of person you normally have on the show. It seemed like a lot of your guests have sort of a political sort of side. Is that true, or did I not read more in depth all of it?
We all have different twists and turns in our lives, and I had spent a number of years involved in government as an elected official in the state level and the local level. And then after a while I was an elected official, I believed that I could use my position to make a difference in the world. And I wanted to make a difference in the world. But the longer I live, and maybe some of it has to do with just maturing in my own perspective, I'm starting to see that government doesn't have the answer. And maybe it has 10% of the answers, but 90% of our problems are not problems that government can fix. Oh, yeah. Our real problems are something much deeper, our morality, which comes from our relationship with God. And if we can't get that one right, then there's no way we're going to fix the rest of the problems of the country. Yeah. So I appreciate you asking me the question, because it's really important for us to understand. A lot of people, as soon as they have a problem, look to government instead of looking to God. And when government tries to usurp the position of the church in people's lives, which it has done with welfare and healthcare and providing for widows and orphans. Well, God told the church to take care of the widows and orphans. He told the people, if you've got a widow and orphan in your life, take care of them. Don't be calling your government to go take care of the problem. So I would get perturbed. Frequently, I would get mail from people. What really got me going was this one woman, a constituent of mine, was complaining about how much she got paid for taking care of this handicapped person. And there was a moment during my line of questioning when I realized that that handicapped person she's taking care of is her own son.
Oh.
And it appalled me. I'm like, wait a second, there's something wrong here. You gave birth to him, and now you want the government to pay you to take care of him. That is how far messed up we've gotten. And it might offend some people who are taking care of their relatives and getting paid for it, but it helped me realize that we've gone so far off the path. That's not what Jesus would tell us to do. He would tell us to take care of our family members and call out to him for his grace. If government isn't going to fix the country, the only thing that's going to fix the country is people like you who understand what's at stake. And when the country gets right with God on an individual basis, then we'll see some of the societal ills correct themselves.
Yeah, we're only going to find hope in Jesus Christ. And so that's just the message on my heart right now. I think it's timeless, and I hope your readers are encouraged by that.
This has been another edition of Homefront. I'm Cynthia Davis, and I thank you for joining us. We're taking America back one family at a time. I sincerely hope you heard something that left you feeling inspired, motivated, and ready to engage our culture. If you enjoyed our show, you can find more at cynthiadavis.net. You can also find me on Facebook at Homefront with Cynthia Davis. Have a great week, and make sure you come back next time for another edition of Homefront.